Okay, so here we are. We're good.
Good.
So give me a little update. Tell me how you're doing, and maybe some of the questions that you have regarding going through the process and that sort of thing. We'll start with your agenda, and then we'll kind of go on some of the materials that I need to cover today.
Okay. Well, it's kind of funny because we went through the whole homework of minimum and maximum and looking at our homework assignment. And see, Curtis, we came over here a little less than 2 years ago. We've got 110 households. So basically what we did was we found what we have is 49 households.
Okay.
And I think we had 10 butlers. 11
okay.
butlers, 49 households. So we basically came up with our, the minimum within that 49 in terms of the absolute minimum, because we needed an absolute minimum.
Right.
And, and that's 773,000. And then the average within that 49 was, we did. So I would say that it's probably
about a million.
It's about a million and a half would be what we would call the target minimum if we have that right.
Okay.
Okay.
That sounds about right. Okay.
Okay. Then we took it a step further because then we've got to come up with a 20% of the 49. So we've identified those people. Because we want to identify them as to what niche they fall into and also
right.
start to do the scheduling. So we've
right.
identified the top 20 of those 49 who are going to receive this service.
Okay. All right. Let's just make one clarification.
Yeah.
The 49 households that you are keeping are going to get the 1242 service.
Correct.
So
not all of them. Some of them are butlers. Oh, some of them are butlers. Yeah, some.
Yeah. And the
butlers. 46 households.
Yeah. The butlers are going to get a 4-1 service.
Right.
Okay. So basically what we're saying then is you need to move your practice to about 85 households. Okay. Now that's, you got 49, so we're trying to get to about 85. So.
How do you get that number?
How do you go from 49 to 85?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I can answer that question in like 3 minutes, but.
Where did you get 85, not that?
Yeah.
Like, where did you...
Well, 85 is the typical number that if you plug them into the scheduler that you could contact once a month with no problem. To 100 you could handle, but beyond that you're going to be overwhelmed and something's going to give in the practice. Either you won't be acquiring new relationships, kind of upgrading your client base, those are the issues that are associated with that. So, 85 is a comfortable number of folks that can get the 1242 service that can be scheduled. Okay.
Okay. Now, I guess what we were doing though, Curtis, and maybe we were a little bit conservative with the 49, just because I think that are we going to, we're not going to go from 0 to 85 in the first. Are we going to gradually get up to 85?
Right. So basically, we've got quite a few things to cover before we get into the client acquisition phase. And so we want you to get familiar with these concepts because you'll be working them. Like you'll bring in new relationships, and then you'll constantly be upgrading, deciding who do you keep, who stays, throughout your career. So that's why we're putting concepts down now. Now, when we get into client acquisition and start talking about how many prospects that we are going to pay attention to, that number is roughly around 90. And so we have to have room to plug the prospects in, and we haven't even gotten into coaching you on the kind of the nine or the seven to nine prospecting methodologies to grow the practice. So we're not quite there yet, but all of this is setting you up for that.
Okay.
So the 85 number is basically our 49 number plus acquisition clients.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And, you know, so think about this. If you go from 49 to 85 with the targets we have in place, you probably double your practice in 24 months or less. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's the idea.
I'm not sure I'm understanding. Go on.
Okay. Well, hold
on a second, Curtis, because are you saying, just before we leave this subject, are you saying that because we have 110 households and we've identified 49, do we need to put more people within the existing households, like 85 of 110? That we have? Are we being too conservative, or should we take on more of a workload as far as adding more people to this model?
Okay, let me back it up here a bit, because if we have 110 households, 100 is about where you need to be in terms of scheduling and the 1242 service model. Okay. Now, what does the 49 represent? I need a point of clarification there.
The 49 is the number of people we selected to go into Supernova.
Okay. So the 49, so ideally, what you want to have is about 85 household relationships that get Supernova service. And that's where the growth of your practice is gonna really come from. It's not going to come from some of these other households that don't quite have the potential to hit your targets and your growth numbers. Okay, so don't get too hung up on it right now. I want you to be concerned about who we target going forward so that there's a steady flow of potential relationships that come in, and then you can decide, you know, if you want to work with them or not. You know, typically what happens outside of Supernova is you don't get to pick and choose. You see somebody that's got some assets and you're going to grab them. But here we're going to be a little more picky and selective in terms of new household relationships that we gather.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So don't get too hung up on it. I want you to know what your targets are, and you set that at 1.5 million, okay, which is a good target, okay? And we basically have established that the targeted number of households that we want is somewhere between 85 to 100, okay?
Okay.
All right. Is that clear?
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay, good. So, and that's good for us to review that. So let's kind of talk a little bit. We got a number of things to talk about. Let's talk about the Super Standard for a moment. And I want to know that you can just basically articulate that. So I'm going to articulate the standard for a moment. And it's just kind of off the cuff. I haven't rehearsed this. But Mr. Jones, you know, I appreciate you sitting down with us today. We wanted to know that we've upgraded our practice to provide more of a concierge service to clients like yourself. In that regard, we have a standard in our practice, which consists of 12 monthly contacts or reviews, with two of the reviews being telephonic, the other two being in-person reviews. We provide a rapid response to your problems, a one-hour response, with hopefully a 24-hour resolution. In addition to that, we also provide our clients with a financial plan and with an eye toward intergenerational planning. How does that sound to you? Now, what's going to happen is they're going to throw out questions or responses. Oh, man, that sounds great. That's what I've been looking for, and I'm glad that you all have done this, and I want to bring you more assets. That happens. Or some, which are a little cynical, may say, well, look, that sounds good if you can do it. Then you're going to have others that might have an objection to, well, talking to me 12 times a year, that's kind of a lot. Well, you know, what you want to do is these sessions, some of these sessions are designed to be 15 minutes in length, and they're touch-based calls to make sure and reinforce our strategy, that things are on target, and make sure that you don't have any questions that have come up, you know, during a 30-month time frame. You know, we've had clients sell businesses, get divorced, new marriages, babies come in. So we feel like it's important to at least have a touch-base call. And so that's how you respond to that kind of an objection. Okay. Now, let's see if you feel comfortable articulating the Supernova service model, Terry, by just, you know, just kind of throw it out there for me. You know, call me Curtis and what you have in store for me.
All right, Curtis, it's good to see you this morning, and we're very proud to introduce to you an upgrade to our existing service model that we are selecting a number of clients who we are going to elevate the service level to that of what you would experience at a Ritz-Carlton or, you know, concierge service, where there are three tenets and three core beliefs in this new service model. First being that we will contact you 12 times a year, monthly, of which two over the phone and two in person will be reviews. So we will be making monthly contacts. The second thing is that we are introducing a rapid response service to service issues that you may have, with a plan to respond within an hour and a resolution if possible, within 24 hours. And the third, which we feel very strongly about in providing this high level of service to a limited number of clients, a select few, is that we are doing multi-generational planning with a financial plan that incorporates generational planning strategies and working with this regularly as we proceed in this new model.
All right. you know, that's pretty good, you know, for
first go around.
Good for your first time, you know, don't be too hard. You know, that's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the client on the same emotional level of, look, you're being upgraded to first class, and this is what we provide, okay? So that's pretty good. And the more you articulate this, I think the better you're going to be at covering all the bases. But all the bases were covered. So,
okay.
So close. Very good.
Thank you. Okay, yeah. But yeah, you're right. It's like anything else. The more, you know, the more you do it. I've tried it a couple times. I did it with, you know, dinner at Saturday. We were some friends of ours, and it just, you know, it's a little bit haywire. But you know, it didn't quite. You're right. It's just you get better at it. You know, I'll have to focus on that.
Yeah, you know, look, probably every time I deliver this, I'm saying something a little bit different. So
yeah, just happens, right.
Yeah, it's just kind of part of the conversation. You know, look, we're upgrading you to first class. We're providing a concierge service. And what does that mean? That means we're going to be providing you with 12 monthly contacts. Now, don't get overwhelmed by that, because I'm not going to – each one of these contacts is not a sales call.
Right.
You know, so 12 contacts, 4 appointments or reviews. These reviews are designed to – you know, kind of touch base, do a progress check. So 2 of them will be telephonic. The other 2 will be in person. And then we're going to provide a rapid response to your problems and a 24-hour resolution, if possible. And then finally, we want to provide you with a financial plan and with an eye toward looking at generational planning. How does that sound to you so far, Mr. Jones? Okay. And then they're going to come up with their various objections. So what I want you to now think about is how you are prepared to handle their reactions. So, you know, sometimes you may get a reaction that'll be one of 2 ways. Yeah, if you actually do it, and, well, you know, we're certainly using our technology. We're going to try to create a set time each month to speak with you. So that's how we plan on implementing our new service. They may have a reaction that says, look, that's great. I'm not going to take my $5 million dollar account elsewhere, you know, where they've been, or I may consolidate more of my assets with you, okay? So you're going to get those kinds of reactions. And what you're doing here is you're putting a wall of competence around your best clients. They should transfer other accounts. You should bring in new assets. Now, one of the things in your training materials that was discussed is the rule of reciprocity. And the rule of reciprocity, I want to make this simple. If I take you to dinner and you have a good time, what you're going to leave with, some of your parting communication to me is, God, I really had a great time, Curtis. Next time, let's do dinner at one of my favorite restaurants, okay? And it happens in golf. You take somebody to your club, they thank you, had a great time, the 19th hole. Next time, I want you to experience my club in Muirfield, okay? So that's the rule of reciprocity. It's give and get something of equal value, okay? People feel that they're taking advantage when it's just one way, okay? Meaning that you're doing everything, and then they're not giving anything in return. So that's the rule of reciprocity. Okay. The next thing I want to cover is centers. First of all, any questions on the rule of reciprocity?
Nope. Good.
Okay. Centers of influence. Now, as you know, in Supernova, keeping track of people is going to be, you're going to raise that to a level of efficiency. And we'll cover the contents of the folder for everyone. But for centers of influence, they get a folder too. They get placed on a schedule. You meet with them once per month, okay? Just like you'd be doing with a client. Except the centers of influence will probably get a face-to-face meeting, and it could be a breakfast or a lunch. These are folks that have the capacity to introduce you to other folks, okay? So let's take me for an example and try to determine, well, am I a center of influence? Well, I've got probably 1,000 connections on LinkedIn. Okay? Which if I gave, you know, somebody that lived in proximity access, you know, and they connected with me, they have access to 1,000 names. But the big deal about centers of influence is they must provide a personal introduction. You don't accept, hey, here's a phone number, go call Joe. You know, you are always striving for a handoff where that center of influence is bringing an individual to the breakfast meeting or to the lunch and making the personal introduction. Now, we cover this in a little more depth in the client acquisition phase, but I wanted to set it up in terms of your understanding of a center of influence. Okay. The next thing that we want to talk about in the center of influence is they could be CPAs, they could be lawyers, they could just be any kind of professional, consultants, real estate folks, people that can provide a number of personal introductions. It's almost like you have them working for you, and they're happy to do it. Okay? So you know, I'll give you an example. You know, a guy that he comes up here from L.A. to meet with me. A friend of mine just moved down to Los Angeles, and he's maybe the number two guy in the general counsel's office for Snapchat. So I'm going to make the personal introduction to this guy who got a windfall of about $2.5 million and is probably going to have Rule 144, stock option financing, any number of corporate services. So I just want you to understand the potential of a center of influence if cultivated properly. Mm-hmm. So they get a folder, you're keeping notes, you know, you're tracking their interests, and you know, they're helping you there. So that's center of influence. Questions on that? Okay.
I do have a question going back. In the beginning of center of influence, you talked about folders.
Right.
What's in the
folders?
Expand
on the folders.
Yeah, what's in the folders?
Okay, so we haven't discussed the contents of the folders yet, but in the manual, you know, and it's in about, I'm going to say section 12, or 14 discusses the contents of the folder for prospects, the contents of the folders for COIs. So we're a little bit ahead of the game.
Okay.
Is that something they keep, or do we keep that?
Yeah, you're going to keep a folder, and you're going to give them a folder. Okay?
Okay.
So, for example, on a client folder, you know, you're going to have critical contact information. There's going to be information about enthusiastically endorsed providers, second page performance review or other benchmark planning documents, information about the topic of the month, introductions given and received, cash flow analysis. So we've set up kind of organized content, and you can add to it. Okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, it might be a useful article that center of influence would like to see. Okay. So one of the way of this, I want to go back to, well, I think what I want to do is I want to cover niche markets, which is, you know, identified in the second section here. And
okay.
we talked about, you know, because you've segmented, now it's time to uncover and refine your niches. And so what I did is I sent you an article.
Yeah, I got it.
And so it's good to look it over now, and then it's good to look at it again when we move into the client acquisition phase. So one of the things about niche markets is a lot of folks don't readily understand what a niche market is. And that's when you concentrate your efforts on the specific needs of a segment or subset of the population. Okay? And you become an expert on that segment. All right. Let's use me as an example. All right. So if my focus is on financial services and financial advisors and managers, then I need to make sure I'm staying up with that market. Okay. So what do I read? I've got to read Trust Advisor, Advisor Perspectives, Investment News Daily, Advisor Hub, RIA Biz, just a few of the publications that keep me up to speed from a market intelligence point of view. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So give me an idea of one of the niche markets that you're focused on right now.
Well, see,
we were thinking of either, you know, because Jeremy and I have identified young professionals and, you know, small business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not, you know, it's a little bit different, Curtis, because we're in a rural market. And so sometimes you get references to, you know, very specific niches like dentists, and we're just not in an area that, you know, like a small business owner could be farmers. You know, there's plenty of those around here.
Yeah.
So the business owner niche can cover a lot of ground here, but
right.
I know where you're going with this. It's like identify what it is and educate yourself on that market, small business owners, publications, or whatever it is. Okay.
I mean, we understand that it's pretty general, but the problem
right.
is if we were to come in and say, hey, listen, we're going to focus on only this segment of manufacturing, like it might get us a couple clients, but it's not going to be enough to support us.
Right.
You know what I mean? We don't have any major companies in this area. It's okay. More a lot of small business, but not a lot of small business that do the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So yeah. Let me just throw this out at you.
Okay.
Look up the demographics. Look under economic council for your location, mm-hmm. and see what comes out. Because I had an FA up in Canada,
mm-hmm.
an obscure spot. And once I did the homework, discovered that I had a population of 775,000, agriculture, but they were converting to tech rapidly, and there was a petroleum industry that was growing. He had no clients in that segment. I'm also dealing with, are you familiar with Bakersfield, California?
Yeah, sure. I've been there.
You've been there? Not a whole lot in Bakersfield, right?
No.
Well, guess what? This team is doing $3 million in revenue in Bakersfield. And when we started looking at the demographics, there were a lot of opportunities that they just weren't going after. They just landed recently, there was a local college, a $40 million endowment.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is that look at what's in your market, not just what you see superficially, but get some research on your market and come up with a couple of niches. Now, you know, if it's farmers, farmers have needs. They got growing seasons. They have periods of time when they got cash flow management issues. You need to understand the seasonality of their business. They're working with CPAs. You know, a lot of clients say that their CPAs only talk to them once a year, around tax time. So we want you to begin to start to look at what the niche markets might be, read some of the trade journals in your market. In this article, I went to one called TechCrunch. But I put two resources for looking at trade journals in a number of different industries, okay, so that you can get yourself up to expert status in a couple of niche markets. So hold the thought. You're going to try to cultivate at least two, possibly three niche markets. Okay? Make sense?
So it's like, it's not more than three, like, three's where you're shooting for?
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends. You know, when you look at your market and, you know, maybe your market I don't think it would necessarily be farmers, but it might be agriculture. So then you start thinking agriculture. Well, you know, they got to grow the product. They got to get the product to distribution centers. Folks that run distribution centers might be clients. Folks that service the business, people involved in feed, people involved in seed. You know, you start to, you know, look at that market. That's one market. Now, I haven't done my research, so I can't tell you all the different components that are related to that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you one more example. I had a stint in Michigan, Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Okay. So only 110 people in the town. And 105,000 of them showed up at a football game on Saturdays.
Yeah.
So we were able to double production and revenue doing a couple of things. We didn't look at business owners. We didn't look at lending. So all of a sudden, we started getting vendors. The guy that supplied screws to Ford Motor Corporation was a multimillionaire. So, you know, once we started digging deep in terms of the demographics, we uncovered some very affluent people. Okay. So that's the point I wanted to make, is that we needed to think thoughtfully about, you know, who had money in that town. And a lot of folks lived in Ann Arbor and worked in Detroit and were executives. So our white-collar business was pretty weak, and we needed to start focusing on that. So there you go, niche markets. All right. Let's talk about, I got a few more moments here on, so your natural market is what you came into the business with. You know, they were some relationships you had, maybe some personal contacts, folks that you went to school with. So now your targets are going to be similar to the clients you have, but they'll meet your minimums. And they may be a part of affinity groups. So they may serve on nonprofit boards, they may be in country clubs, but they're people that you'd like to work with, and they have the ability to qualify as a client. So when you start to think about niche markets, look at the businesses, determine the level of potential clients. You know, what do they do for a living? You know, savings, stock options, do they have wealth? And the other thing is brainstorm with your very close clients. Look, I'm thinking about building my practice around, you know, the industry that he's in, for example. How would you go about it? What are your thoughts? Let's meet for lunch. And you're going to focus on about 2-3 niche markets and see where they fit. Okay. Personal branding. What makes you unique? The quality of your brand is based upon your worst clients. So there's no A, B, C, D segments in your book. You treat them all the same. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, once you think you have the model really, really down, then you've got to introduce it and teach it to the centers of influence. Okay.
What's the time frame for, you know, in generally speaking, Curtis, by the time, you know, people get comfortable enough with the model to start to take it to the centers of influence, what in your experience is usually about, what's the time frame for that to happen?
Well, I think that there should probably be a 4 to 6 week time frame. It depends on where you stand right now with centers of influence. Do you have in your book of clients this one client that just loves you up and down? You can tell them anything, you can talk about business, and they are interested in helping you succeed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So jot that one down and, you know, talk to them about your model and begin to educate them and see if they can be a center of influence. Not all centers of influence will be clients, okay? So it could be somebody on the chamber board, you know, that knows everybody. It could be somebody who is president of the Kiwanis, who knows all of the business owners. They can be centers of influence. So CPAs, professionals, attorneys, realtors, business brokers, people that can send you referrals. So I haven't told you what you're going to do with them yet. We're just in the identification stage right now.
Okay.
Right? So right now, in terms of summary, you got your absolute minimums, you got your target minimums, your target number of clients, you're defining the ideal client relationship, you're using your screens, you're starting now to introduce Supernova to that first batch of clients, okay? And you are starting to think about your target niche markets. Now, let me, I'm going to just do a little homework for you. Tell me about where you're located.
Central Pennsylvania.
Okay, Pennsylvania. What part?
Central, yeah. We're 77 miles northwest of Harrisburg. We're about 55 miles east of State College. We're Central PA.
Okay. All right. Now, because I used to live up there, and not in Pennsylvania, but in New Jersey, and our region was located there. The Mid-Atlantic, when Wynn Smith was running the region. And so, you know, State College was all part of it.
Okay.
You know, Harrisburg, you know, Lancaster, all those, towns in Pennsylvania were all part of that. Mm-hmm. So how about universities?
Well, we have Susquehanna, Bucknell.
Bucknell is in Lewisburg, where we are right now. We're going to be heading to Susquehanna, to Sealands Grove. Curtis is where Susquehanna University is based.
Okay.
So we're in we're connected to two college towns.
Okay. And State College, obviously, Penn State.
Yeah, 55 miles to the west.
Okay.
We're looking at that distance. We have Hatt, which is Harrisburg.
Williamsport. Yep.
Which has two colleges in it.
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of colleges around us.
Okay. So colleges have professors that are getting royalties, writing books. They're not just depending upon their salaries. You just have to identify which ones are doing it. And I'll leave you with this thought. And the thought is, we put together what we called a model cities program, where, you know, an FA went into a market or a town and spent the day there, pressing the flesh, getting to know people, and cultivating business in that location, because a lot of people just never went. So, you know, in Michigan, for example, there were places like Brighton, Michigan,
yeah.
Plymouth, you know, and we started building big business out of some of those suburban, I wouldn't call them suburban, but out of some of those urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thought I want to leave you with, is that maybe one or two of those towns become targets.
Yeah, well, we're going to be, you know, we're going to have a pretty good presence in Sealands Grove, where we're going to have visibility and our thinking, you know, we're kind of thinking along those lines, Curtis, because once we just bought a building, you know, we're going to be doing some renovations and we're probably going to move there early next year. We definitely want to make connections with the university and the community because we're going to have great visibility in that community to really start to make the connections and identify the niches. It's just, you know, we're sort of new and not there yet, but that's the obvious niche is to connect with the business school at Susquehanna. We already know some people there, and that's a logical place for us to start. That would, I guess that would be a niche under the definitions of a niche, right?
Well, that's partially true. If you said that you specialized in professors who wrote books, had speaking engagements, and brought in royalties, then I would say that's a niche.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you were to say you were going after entrepreneurs that were developing a high-tech software online business, then I would say that's a niche. So what I'm saying is drill down in terms of their level of expertise so that you can advise those particular folks.
Okay.
And just to give you another example, let's say that you had some professors engaged in e-learning. Do you know that that's a business that by 2022 is expected to grow to $224 billion?
Mm-hmm.
See, I want you to be able to drill down, have facts at your disposal, because you have more than a superficial understanding of those businesses.
Okay, I'm with you.
You with me now? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Not to overwhelm, but just to get you thinking a little bit about how you drill down on these markets.
Okay. Be an expert in those markets.
Exactly. The ones you used or decide to cultivate.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so that kind of concludes what we wanted to talk about today. Any questions? Before we close,
Jeremy?
No, I think we're okay.
No, Curtis. No, we just have a little bit of thinking to do about niches. I think it takes a little bit more work to identify them. I think we have a better understanding of how you guys are looking at them and how you want us to look at them. Okay, so we've identified minimums. So we're going to talk Tuesday next week rather than Wednesday. I think Lori had made that change. So
here's a statistic you should know is when advisors are focused on niche markets, they're 30% more productive than those that don't. So this won't be the last time we cover this, so don't be alarmed that you got to stop everything and get into this. Just read that article very carefully and look at the resources I've identified in the article for you to cultivate, some information. I mean, you know, when you live out here in the San Francisco Bay Area, you got to be reading TechCrunch. You got to know what LinkedIn, what Marvel, Netflix, Google, and all the other alphabet companies are doing. And if you're an advisor, you're going to have to know about Rule 144, stock option financing, and all of the windfalls that these people are getting, I mean, with Uber and Lyft and everything else. So, you know, just be broad-based, open-minded about what business might exist in your market.
Okay.
Okay, guys.
Okay. All right.
Speaking with you.
Curtis, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to talk, and we'll be looking for our homework assignment. Talk to you next week.
All righty. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks, Curtis. We'll see you.
Okay.